Welcome to But Why Though, the podcast, a roundtable conversation about all things pop culture. I'm your host, Alex, and I'm joined this week by Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
This week, we are talking about pop culture and memes as like a common language, and more specifically, how that intersects with protest. We had originally planned to do this episode shortly after the No Kings protest, and we pushed it back because we remembered that 28 years later was coming out, but we still want to talk about it because we still think it's important. But before we get into that, Adrian, what have you been enjoying this week?
Yeah, I've been enjoying... I actually saw 28 Weeks Later this week.
Oh, yeah, how'd you like it?
I enjoyed it a lot more. It was much more of a... It's like, I know that horror is a great medium for storytelling, and I mean, we'll talk a lot about that, I'm sure, in this episode, but it's not often that I see it in horror because I'm always grossed out or scared, but like, this is... That was good. It was really good. I really enjoyed it. Yeah. I don't know if the other movies are that... I don't remember if the other movies are that good because I haven't watched them since I was a kid, but... That one's really good. I love the story, love the way it ended, love the imagery, love the dong swinging, you know, all of it. All of it was good.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, I really like that. Yeah. Anything else?
Dude, I've been obsessed with playing Baldur's Gate still with my wife.
Are you guys doing a two-person run?
Yeah, we're doing a two-person co-op run on Xbox, which I highly recommend to anyone who has a partner who you want to play any kind of game with. It's been so much fun. This is like our third restart of a campaign. One, we restarted it because I don't know how much you know about Baldur's Gate, but there's like a point in the game where if you do something, your face changes, and she didn't like the way her face changed, and she didn't want to do a mod, so we had to like restart because it made her ugly.
Gotcha.
And then another one, I was trying to romance a character. The person I needed to like advance her romance died somewhere somehow, and I couldn't romance her, so we had to restart. And now we're on.
How many hours in were you each time that this happened?
The first time, I think maybe like 40. The other one, maybe like 30 or so. So, and then now we're firmly into Act 3 now. Maybe like 100 hours in.
Okay.
Probably still maybe about 20 more hours to go, I would say, just based on like the quests and stuff we have. So it's been really great. It's been really great. And, you know, it's Pride Month and my characters are gay in the game. So it's been a great way to spend my Pride Month this month with my gay wife. So
yeah.
Play Baldur's Gate. Best $60 you'll spend on the game. It's great.
I do need to pick it up and play it. I just need to I need to mentally prepare myself for carving out that much time.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is a dumb thing to say because I'm still, like, in the middle of playing Like a Dragon. And that game is, I mean, I'm, like, 20 hours in, and I think I'm not even halfway.
Yeah.
And that's a game that can take, you know, 100 hours if you wanted to. And then once I finish that, I have Like a Dragon, Pirate Yakuza, and Hawaii.
Exactly.
Which I'm also excited to play. But then I also have, like, Elden. Like, I have all these games that are, like, 100 hours, and then I look at Baldur's Gate, and something about it... In my head, I'm like, is now the time for this?
Yeah, it's definitely... I think the great thing about it is that you'll pick it up whenever. I'm sure people will pick this game up in 10 years, have the same experience. And the thing I love the most about it, I have no idea. I need to, like accumulate to how many hours I have across all my playthroughs. I played it in the beta. I played it in the alpha for But Why, though. Played it for the review, and now I'm playing it with my wife. So I probably have, you know, maybe 500 hours, I think, or so in the game. This last playthrough with my wife, still new things happening in the first two acts that I had never seen before. Things that
that's
missed.
Cool. Yeah,
so
I had
the replayability is crazy.
I had a coworker who played it, and it seemed like it was taking him forever, but he was trying to see literally everything that he could in his first playthrough. So yeah, at one point he was like, "Yeah, I'm like 60 hours in. I'm still in Act One," and I was like, "How? Like, how are you? That's a whole game. How are you in Act One?"
Yeah, and there's still a bunch of stuff you missed. You could try and hit everything. I think I've learned through my playthrough. At this point, I'm just like, I'll just get it on my next one. Cause
I'm not gonna do all of it. Yeah, you got to pick and choose a little bit.
Yeah. What about you? What have you been?
Yeah,
liking?
I talked about it last week, but I sort of accidentally replayed Resident Evil 7 in like 3 days.
Okay.
Because I love Resident Evil games. The thing that I always forget is that once you've played it and you know how the puzzles work, your second playthrough is significantly shorter. I think my first playthrough of Village was like somewhere in like the 8 to 11 hour range, and I've now beat it multiple times in under 3 hours.
Wow.
Because once you know what you're doing and have some unlimited ammo, you can just cook, and it's great. So that was one. I played a DLC for that I hadn't before, where you play as a new character, and you don't get a gun, you punch everything.
Oh.
And it is kind of incredible, kind of ridiculous that you're just going around punching these mutated monsters to death. And then like the boss fight, even you're like choke slamming him, and like it looks like WWE. It's insane.
Yeah.
Like you literally like grab someone by the hips, pick them up, and slam them flat on the floor on their back.
That sounds fun. Yeah.
So that's been fun.
I haven't played a Resident Evil game since, I don't know which one, but I played it on VR on the PlayStation 4. And I
think, was it in a house with a family from Louisiana?
Yeah, who tried to murder me. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
That's a great one. But yeah, so I did that. I've been enjoying that. Nice. And then I finally started watching Delicious in Dungeon.
Ooh, fun.
And I'm having a great time with that. It's just very fun. It's so far lighthearted, and I'm enjoying that. I don't know if that's going to change. I know sometimes, you know, anime pivots hard.
Yeah, I think it pivots to, like, character moments more than anything. So I think it's still a good, fun watch, I think, for the most part.
I'm having a really good time with that. And I think, though, that's probably my main thing. I also, just to give a quick shout out to my special interest that gets airtime on this show, I have been reading the Saturday Morning Ninja Turtles comic that they just started like a year or two ago. It's all of the like animation style from the cartoon, but with new storylines. And it's actually a pretty good balance of not being as, it's, you know, like a little bit kid friendly, but there's still some jokes slipped in there that are like a bit more advanced, not necessarily adult, just like, like you're still aiming for complicated humor and all that. But that's been fun. And mostly I'm just doing that to fill time until later this summer when they start they're reprinting volume 4, which I'm not going to get into this because we would be fully in me info dumping. But there is a series that was very limited print initially that is now getting reprinted.
Nice.
So I'm kind of like getting my fill until that comes out and I can start reading that.
Yeah. I actually just started, I found a comic book shop next to a Micro Center just opened up in my town. I don't know if you know, you've been to a Micro Center before.
I have not been to one, but I've heard of it.
Yeah. So one just opened up again in near my house, and there's a really great comic book shop right next to it. That's obviously getting so much traction now that Micro Center is there. And I've been going once a week I've never been like a comic book, like picking up. I've always just read them digitally just because that's always what I had access to. So I've been picking up more like physical comics. I was like reading them at the market I was doing yesterday. So it's been nice to jump back in and grab a couple physical copies.
Nice. Yeah. That's fun.
You know, plug for your local comic book shop.
If you haven't seen it there, DC has their new, I don't remember exactly what it's called, but it's basically like their big stories, but in a smaller like paperback format for $10.
Nice. So they were telling me about that. Yeah.
Yeah. So if you haven't read Kingdom Come, or if you haven't read All-Star Superman or Hush or any of that, like I think even Watchmen got part of this reprint. It's just a great way to pick up like classic stories for cheap.
Yeah,
since a lot of times
I was trying to pick up Blue Beetle stuff, obviously, as like an El Paso and brown person.
Oh yeah.
They didn't have any. Actually,
Blue Beetle I have not read a lot of, but I'll have to see if I can find any at my comic shop. Where can people find you online before we get into this episode?
Online at Super Reefs 93, SUPERRUIZ 93. Pretty much anywhere.
You're all over with that one, right? You managed to grab it everywhere.
Yeah, I pretty much have it everywhere. You know, cool. And then writing on But Why Though, and then this is the Cheese May podcast with my partner. We talk about Star Wars stuff.
Nice. You can find me on Blue Sky at Most Always Alex. I'm not really anywhere else. If you find me somewhere else under that name, it's either not me or I'm not paying attention. That being said, let's get into it. The initial idea for this was just from seeing a bunch of posts online and in person, because I went to one, of all of these different signs that people made for the No Kings protest. And there was this very obvious trend of like pop culture signs. Mm-hmm. So especially around Star Wars, which we'll get into, like that's not going to be the whole episode. We can't just talk about Andor, but we can't not talk about it. I should say up front, like pop culture is a very broad term. It's kind of like all of your media intake to some degree. Then, you know, this idea of like memes, which, I feel like I almost want to back up all the way to like what meme originally meant, and that it was like referring to how ideas and behavior spread. And then it started referring to like this very specific idea of like, here's an image that has an ascribed meaning or context, and then you put text over it. And now it just, I feel like, tell me if Adrian, if I'm crazy, I feel like at this point, people, when they say meme, they just mean I saw a picture or I saw a picture with text. I saw a joke online.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's expanded past that a little bit. I mean, you know, you know, people doing it for the meme, like doing stuff that's, I don't know if it's like millennial humor or,
yeah.
But, you know, like that's a meme. Like you're, it's kind of like hard. I feel like people know what it is, right? If you're listening to this podcast.
Yeah. Right? I feel like in this context.
Yeah. I think in this context, like, I think the action of the images has like taken out, and that's kind of like what we're going to be talking about today. It's going to sound stupid, but my wife was really, we went to a No Kings protest, and you know, we didn't make any signs or anything like that because I was too worried about like being on edge and like thinking about safety and stuff the whole time. But like she was chanting the Krusty Krab is unfair, Mr. Krabs is in there. Right. So like that's the outward part of the meme in real life. So I think that we're in the part where like the meme is the real life.
It's blending together in a really interesting way.
Yeah.
It's
not just like the copy pasta stuff, you know, from like the early dig days. You know what I mean? So it's
definitely. It's because it's all, I think it is very easy, widely accessible shorthand. The first thing I could think of is like exhausted Ben Affleck pictures.
Yeah.
You can post that in reply to whatever, and people know exactly what you mean when you're like, this is where I'm at mentally. And like, because it's that social shorthand, it's also, and it's all, you know, movies, TV accessible, whatever. Like it's basically common ground. It's basically inside jokes. Mm-hmm. Right. But now we're in this weird spot where like we're blending it into protests. We're blending it into things that have like maybe more serious meaning. I feel like what I tried to do in outlining this was like break down what signs did I see at the protest? And so tell me if this matches the categories that you saw. Is there was like very to the point signs, like a lot of signs that just said no kings or had a crown crossed out on it. And then there was like the informative signs where it was, here's a sign and here's a list of things that someone has done, whether it's Elon Musk, Donald Trump, whoever, you know. And then there was like humor based. I saw one that said, no one paid us to be here. We hate you for free. And then there's, you know, like the signs that people just saw online and copied, like even the introverts are here. And then I'm going to just to make sure that this transitions smoothly. Then there's the not useful signs, the brunch. Did you see the brunch sign and how that kind of went down?
I heard about it. Like I saw people posting about it, but I never saw an actual sign of it.
It was literally just somebody made a sign that said, if Kamala had won, we'd be at brunch.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people were like, oh, so you think that the prior suffering was preferable?
Yeah.
Like the prior bad state that we have been descending into was like still good to you. Like you would have been fine with this. And then the pop culture signs, the rebel logos, whatever quippy, you know, thing you want to draw, Krusty Krab chants, like all that stuff.
Yeah.
Like all of these little like more like, oh, it's like in your psyche somewhere. Mm-hmm. All of those things becoming part of it. I guess does that line up with your experience of the protests?
That's all I think all the ones that we saw. Some people like decorated like their cars and stuff, but I think that's like another thing of like what the protest actually was. But there were a lot of memes.
It was and I there was a part of me that was like, has this always been how we protest? And from what I saw, like it's not that like jokes or quips or repeated phrases are not a part of it, but I think that the way we're doing it now is a little bit more.
Yeah.
And that specifically now we're borrowing the language from these things. Mm-hmm. Like I want to say that I saw at least, you know, one like post on Blue Sky or something that to the effect of like welcome to the resistance type, you know, like Star Wars, whatever. And I also want to be clear, like, I don't want to be like overly negative on this. I think it's great that people are protesting. I'm very much in support of it. I want people out there every opportunity they have. I thought this was like an interesting angle to it, that this is the language are now rallying around.
Yeah, I mean, I think the protests are good, but something I was even trying to explain to my partner, she was like, I just want to like go, I feel like we got to go do something. And it's like, well, you're, first of all, like, your existence is resistance. Your birthright, citizenship, Latina in an office full of men, like, your existence is resistance, right? So we don't have to go to this protest, mainly because I just don't know what's going to happen. I mean, people are fucking crazy. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. Like, I'm not worried about the protesters, because it's going to be a bunch, because it was exactly what I thought it was. I thought it was going to be a bunch of older people, a bunch of white people with signs saying, you know, fuck Donald Trump. And that's basically like all it was, which is fine. But if you think about like what protests do, think about like BLM protests and protests that like move the needle a little bit. I don't know if this was one, but it's fun to go out and say fuck Donald Trump while he does his little stupid parade, I guess. So it's I think that the protest felt like a meme in and of itself. So I think it lends to bring out a funny sign. Let's dress up. It's a party, an anti-birthday party, whatever, whatever. So I think it works to a certain extent. I just don't like the other part of it, which is like the more online stuff where people are like, oh, it's light, or like Tony Gilroy was right on with Andor. He knew exactly, like, getting their political beliefs from, you know, letting that inform that, when this specifically is based off of actual real life events, right? Like,
the inspiration.
Yeah. The inspiration has been there. And it's always been there in places like Star Wars. And I don't understand, like, why Andor is the one to do that. Like, I don't know if you've seen Star Wars Rebels, but Star Wars Rebels, the season four finale is, like, them literally bombing a town from orbit, like, as we watch it happen. And the people, the rebels have to be like, hey, stop bombing, we'll do whatever you want, right? So it's worse, I think, than the Gorman Massacre, personally. Like, and it's always been this kind of against the oppressive regime, and you shouldn't have needed Andor to like do that.
Yeah, like, I mean,
Leia's existed since 1977. Like, we've had this.
Yeah, that's definitely a good point, because like, if we're gonna like discourse about Star Wars real quick, the original Star Wars is about people resisting an oppressive government.
Yeah,
and then even the prequel trilogy shows that as that government rose to power, one of the first things they did was wipe out a religious group.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, the parallels to historical events in real life have always been there.
Yeah, I mean, I know that I just wish people would stop quoting George Lucas for stuff, but like, people will always say that like Andor is this because the original trilogies were just made for 14-year-olds and Andor's for adults, blah, 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 blah. But forget that, like, George Lucas also said that the original trilogy was a literal reaction to Vietnam War and the Knox, the Nixon era corruption, to like really pinpoint what the connections were. Even like the Ewoks defeating the Empire with sticks isn't just for like fun and memes and games, right? It's supposed to be indigenous resistance, asystematic warfare, and drawing from like the Viet Cong. And I think, and maybe why people, but I guess the U.S. is bad in both situations. I don't understand. I just don't get it. Like, those resistance things have always been there. And I just hate that, like, we're using Andor to, like, prop that up, when you should just be, like, again, like you said, focusing on the actual historical things that are drawn from, instead of, like, posting the thing of the Gorman Massacre. Like, post, like, the real massacres that happened in our country that have, like, led us to be here. And I think that goes
totally
over.
I mean, I think another good example on that note is HBO's Watchmen series.
Yeah.
And when suddenly everybody was very aware of, was it Tulsa?
Yeah.
Like, everyone is suddenly very aware of this massacre that, like, it's always been there in the history books. You just weren't reading it because pop culture hadn't told you about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's like the other point too, right? Where I think that if it gets you there, great. Right. Krusty Krab is unfair. Mr. Krabs is in there. And that carries with you until you're a 30-year-old getting ready to go protest. And, like, that's getting you jazzed up to go protest. I think that works. I think that's a great way to have pop culture teach you how to protest. Because, like, it's a good episode. If you watch it, it's a good episode, you know?
He's
protesting unfair wages at the Krusty Krab. Good piece of protest.
Yeah, and I think that that's kind of the thing is like, but like you're gonna learn it from somewhere. The question is what you do with it once you learn it.
Exactly.
I like a story that I don't really ever tell because it sounds completely made up. Is when I was in seventh grade, my teacher decided to teach us about like fascism and dictatorships by basically turning our classroom into one.
Ooh, fun.
It was like if you want to ask a question, you first have to ask permission to ask the question. Like if you raise your hand and your arm isn't entirely straight, you won't get acknowledged. Like that, like just really like as strict as he could get without getting in trouble. And the way that we brought it to an end, because apparently we were always capable of ending it, was that I, as a seventh grade dummy, had watched Phantom Menace. And I was like, oh, how do they get rid of him? And how do they get rid of the head of the Republic in that? And it's the whole like vote of no confidence thing.
Oh, God.
So I brought that concept from Phantom Menace into my classroom.
I love that.
And it ultimately ended up working there. It's a longer story than that. But it was that thing of like, oh, yeah, like I was a dumb kid. That was just what I learned. And then where I applied it and it paid off.
I love that.
But only because That's I was like trying story. to find real world application.
And I
think going back to something you said earlier about like, you know, just how people resist and when you go like, and what protest is and isn't, like, because protest ultimately, like, it's not going to change a policy. It is a demonstration of your dissatisfaction and your numbers as a group. And there's some demands in there, there's signs, there's things that people are calling for and rallying for. And like, to be clear, we're not here to police signs. I'll say like an overly long sign, I don't always read all of them. Like an overly quippy sign doesn't always get the point home. Or like the brunch sign, you might just kind of like whiff it a little bit. But like being there and doing something, like that's what's huge. Like it's, I'm going to say, I love that one of, if not the biggest protests in U.S. history was in opposition to Donald Trump on his birthday.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
And it's, you know, and where were you, you know, when that was going on? And I'd hope it's an opposition of that, you know, orange headed dude. But I think, and again, like not here to police signs makes like a whole lot of sense. Cause like, obviously, right. Like people hating on like that lady, that one lady who's at like a brunch thing. Right. Like, I'm just glad she's there, man. I had to physically unanxious myself going into this. Because the last protest I went to was a BLM protest where the cops were not very friendly, where people weren't clearing the roads for us to, like, let us go march around. So I was on edge the whole time. But this felt like a big fuck you to... on his birthday and a moment that I'm going to remember, you know, I'm going to remember these signs. I took some pictures. Yeah. I took some pictures of the funny signs that I show people like, oh, look at this sign. And consequently enough, I took a bunch of Star Wars signs, but only the ones that were like, you know, Leia and making him look like Palpatine.
Yeah. I think like, and even to the point of the brunch sign and like not policing stuff, I feel like with that one, people were more frustrated. Cause it was like, it was kind of like you're missing the point, because like the stuff that we are protesting, like, yes, it's worse under this administration, but it's not new.
Yeah. It's almost like just do a meme, right?
Yeah.
You're probably just safer just doing a meme, like literally just do a picture, a SpongeBob meme, and you're probably better off and like less, I don't know. What's the correct word? Tone deaf.
Yeah. You definitely like are going to have it's going to be a safer bet.
Yeah.
I think it's just interesting because I like where we're at now is I feel like people are paying attention to politics, obviously. But I think that people are also starting to pay attention to the messages of their media, which I not that people ever like fully weren't paying attention to those things. But I think that I'm going to say there was a drought. Where people would watch things and not get the message. Like people who think that Rage Against the Machine is suddenly political, or who think that Star Wars is suddenly political. Like there's some clear evidence that people have not always been reading into things or learning from them.
Yeah. Media
and
literacy.
So now that we do have people who are like, oh, maybe I should learn how to understand things. And also they're paying attention to real world politics. Like it's blending together.
Yeah.
And I do think that this is something that was always going to happen. Just because like when you take a step back, you realize how media saturated our world is. And specifically America is what I can speak to from my personal experience, but like, it's a lot. It's a lot. And so we shouldn't be surprised that like that has become kind of like the brain rotted point of reference where people are like, this is just like Star Wars, forgetting that oppressive governments are not a thing of fiction.
Yeah. And I wonder like how much of that too, because you have some things here on the list of things that like revisit politics constantly.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm just coming off of watching Strange New Worlds, and Star Trek itself is a whole other kind of thing that I know we talk a lot. I talk a lot about Star Wars, but Star Trek obviously does a lot of the same things in the kind of more sci-fi way. But I for this, it's just more interesting and more fun to watch these things happen through these fantastical things, right? Because I'm a history major. Just, I don't know if I've ever, but I'm a history major. History is boring as hell sometimes. Like, it's not as exciting as watching Andor. It's not as exciting as watching The Hunger Games. Are those things related, you know, in terms of like what's influencing them? Yes. Mm-hmm. But like, dude, the American Revolution, the Civil War, it's a lot of like white dudes talking and people who look like me getting the shit end of the stick and like having to like fight and stuff like that. So I think it kind of goes back to the, like you said, just the way that people perceive these things, I think is just inherently different. So like, if you didn't grow up, you know, learning about your culture being oppressed and like being whatever, and you're not seeing that in everyday life, and if media isn't as saturated and we're not online as much, you might just be just figuring out that like, oh yeah, like sometimes black and brown and other minorities and other marginalized communities aren't treated that well just because it's not happening in front of them and they're having to see it, you know, through TikTok now. But
yeah,
as long as you're out there protesting, I'm happy, I guess. But
yeah, but more. I mean, that's also a thing of like looking at what your media intake is and, you know, how much thought you're putting into it, because there is also that thing of, you know, if you are a white kid in a mostly white town and like literally your opportunities to interact with not white people is not a lot, you can still be like seeking out those books, those movies, those opinions online, 100%. Those podcasts. Like we're kind of all responsible for our own media exposure and what we do with it. You know, like pulling out the messages, you know, pulling out the themes, and then, you know, finding those little bits of history and pursuing them. I think if anything, this mix of pop culture and protests, like what I'm hoping is that it, you know, obviously I want the protest side way more than anything, because I want people to stand up for 100%. What is good and right and just, but also I would love if a fun little offshoot of this is some boosted media literacy.
Yeah.
Like the, you know, like Hunger Games, people watched it and were like, oh, this is really interesting. You know, she wrote it as a mix of like reality TV and, you know, the horrors of war and all this stuff. But there's also a lot in there about like class warfare and how there is like how the oppressive class is not just that they are in power, but it's that they are the haves versus the have nots. That seems very much worth noting.
Yeah.
And you know, then like people can look into like, well, historically, how have the rich exploited the poor, and like what's been done about it, and how has the scale balanced itself, and all that. Another really interesting one right now, and since you have your comic shop, I think the first volume is $10, because that's how Image does things, is The Power Fantasy by Kieran Gillen, which the basic premise is that superpowers are real. However, superpower is a classification. And that classification is based on how many people you could kill in an hour.
Wow.
And so they like everybody is referenced in like terms that. Of that.
Yeah.
So there are people who are like really low level, can't do anything. They're not a concern. And then there's someone who it's like, oh, you could kill 6 billion people in an hour.
Yeah.
Like you, and those are the people who are considered superpowers. And it's very clearly kind of an analogy for like nuclear war and how we balance that. Like
Michael, where it's.
Yeah, it's, you know, because the whole premise is that this world hinges on these like 6 people getting along. Mm-hmm. And so like when one of them gets in an argument with another one, the other 4 are immediately on edge and are like, how do we smooth this over? Because if those 2 decide to fight, the planet's done.
Yeah, like, I like it. I like it.
And so that's another one where it's like, okay, like read this, get interested.
expand it out. Place
yeah,
countries.
Learn about nuclear war. Yeah. Learn about mutually assured destruction. Learn about why, you know, this is a great time for you to go learn about like all of the stuff happening with Iran and with all of those policies and agreements and who can and can't have nukes. There's that part of me that's, you know, always, you can always like come down on things and condescend and be like, well, read the news and read history. But for me, I'm like, if pop culture is the thing that gets your foot in the door, cool. Just like, please do more than your foot. Like, please go all the way in and learn and grow.
Yeah. And I would also like, I'd also say that I think that's we don't have video games in here, but like video games too, right? I mean, if you think of,
people who think Fallout was never political, or like Warhammer, Metal Gear Solid.
You have all of these games, but even more than that, I think that like if you go down to like indie games, I was playing at GDC, Take Us North, which is a game about migrants and the coyotes and taking people across, which is obviously now more relevant, I think, than ever.
Yeah.
Very, very simple. I think if you looked at it from the kind of outside perspective, you're like, oh, this is just Death Stranding, but it's like literal Death Stranding. Like these people are literally walking across deserts and doing all kinds of things and to survive. Like it's literally Death Stranding.
Yeah.
And I think without even, and because that game is informed by actual migrant stories, like you run into actual migrant stories as you're playing through it, all of it's informed by immigrants themselves, so like that is almost as good as reading a text, like a history book, or at least getting your foot in the door more than so to back to pick what you play, right? You could go play Warhammer, but you could also go play a game that depicts these real world things in a pretty, I think, more digestible way than like reading it in a history book. So video games too, you know, to kind of plug
definitely
the
I think I mean
for the media.
Yeah, and I think video games too are an area where like it is, I don't want to say it's necessarily more obvious allegory or anything like that, but I think the way in which your brain participates in the story with a video game can sometimes make it click a little bit easier.
I think so, yeah. Because you're the one doing it, I think, right? And I think that empathy should just be inherent. It's probably why people have such hard times playing like minorities in video games. Like, I can't ever fathom putting myself in the, was the I mean, I can give you a million in five games, but like people could not play the new Outlaws game because they couldn't fathom playing a brown woman in a video game,
which, you know, but then turn around and play a game where you are literally a space alien and are like, this is great, and it's like, that's relatable.
And I think so, and I was reading pieces from on But Why Though from South of Midnight, and like that made me go download the game because I just kept seeing all of the real life historical references that are there. Like if you saw it, you'd be like, okay, that's the kind of Easter eggs that'll bring you back to, oh yeah, this is a game informed by real life things. Let me go remember that, you know, go outside, touch grass, and while you're touching grass, you know, maybe it's at a protest and that's fine.
Yeah. And now here's my question. That's something that I've thought of just as we've been talking about this. Do you think that part of the reason that this language of like pop culture and memes and jokes and repetition have cropped up in protest and in political discourse? I mean, like even, you know, The Onion, every time there's a school shooting, posts that article about like that at this point is their own meme that they roll out of like, you know, school shooting in country, no way to prevent this, says country where this is the only place that happens, I think is the headline, something to that effect. But I'm wondering, is all of this sort of, I don't mean this condescendingly, is it an insulation layer? Is it to make it a little bit more protected for you mentally? Where, like, if I put a Star Wars thing on a sign, it's slightly less scary than me being like, we are descending into fascism.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could put, like, they're ripping families away. And put literal pictures of things that we're saying. But I think when we're talking about like the signs and not to police signs, how well is that going to go over with people? Like, should that be what we're doing? Yes, 100%. Is that what we can do? I don't think so. So what's the next best thing? So it's kind of like a, you know, how far are you willing to go in the defense of it? I think it's just, and we should be doing more, but we can't. So, but we have all this media, all this other shared language that's probably easier to get people to understand. Which is why I probably think something like, you know, Star Trek or something like The Hunger Games works, because it's like, oh, that's not us. That's, there's no lines there. That's just District 13. But if you tell someone, yeah, put yourself in District 13, easier to do, versus saying, hey, look at this migrant getting stripped away from her family. Cause all they, all the other, cause what's the point of this protest, right? Like, what are we really doing? We're trying to like make some kind of change, make someone see something differently. So that way something changes. Right. And they're never going to understand the person who doesn't look like them that they're actively oppressing, but they might get this alien because their brain doesn't work in the same kind of media literacy that it should.
Exactly.
So I think, I don't know, it's kind of rambly, but does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, I'm following. I was going to say, I think one thing that when I was at the No Kings protest that was interesting was, because you're talking about like, well, what are we here for? What are we accomplishing? And I think part of it is that politically you want to grow your numbers.
Yeah.
And that, because the thing that I saw that I thought was really interesting, because was the people who were driving by, who they were going slow enough that you could watch them reading the signs, and then they realize what the protest is for.
Honk.
And then they smile and they start honking.
Yeah, that was really nice.
And what I realized is the reason that everybody was taking a second and had to like figure out what it was is, I don't know how it was where you were, but one of the things that people brought out, and I think that this goes to the pop culture and iconography part of the conversation, was American flags.
Yeah.
And that has, so like, I would say what it's been like at least like 12 ish years since anybody wanted to, you know, fly that at a protest. And so I think a lot of people like turned the corner onto the street, saw American flags and were like, wait, what is this?
Yeah. Wait, hold on. Which group is this? Which group is this?
And then having to read the signs and be like, oh, this is a No Kings protest. Oh, this is, you know, but there were definitely people who, they had to take a second to process because of that imagery.
Yeah, no, I think it was definitely like, because I know that when, I mean, all this stuff is happening, and obviously these conversations happen in my household because my wife is a family of immigrants, and I look the way that I do. So we had these conversations, and she was like, should we, like, leave? I was like, no, man, like, this is our country too. Like, our resistance is resistance. Like, they don't want us here. They don't want you here, so we have to stay. So you showing face at these protests, that's like the numbers, right? Like, to see more people who look like you in the thing. So even past like representation in media, just representation at protests, right? You want to see other people who look like you there, so you feel safe enough to go to them. So I think that's a whole other thing of like, how are the protests being portrayed in the media as a form of pop culture thing, right?
Oh, yeah. And I mean, that's a whole other piece of the media literacy conversation here. I think I saw the way someone put it was, just because you saw 100 pictures of a car on fire doesn't mean that there were 100 cars set on fire.
Exactly. Yeah.
Like there was, I don't remember what city it was in, but it was the summer of protests in 2020. And there's a picture of like 7 photographers gathered around a single overturned trash can.
Yeah.
And everything outside of what they're photographing in the shot is fine.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, right. You need to like, you know, if you weren't there, you need to question where the lens was aimed and what you were being shown.
Yeah. Then you have to question even more now, specifically because of the AI stuff. I mean, I saw a video of, it was a bunch of soldiers on a base with a black woman soldier talking about, like, we just got them. We just bombed Iran. We just got them. The Bible says blah, 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 blah. The blessed will be with like the whatever. And it looks real. And it had like over like 200,000 likes. And
whatever. It was just all AI.
It was just all AI. All AI. Scary.
That's
scary.
Yeah, that's
absolutely scary. Because, you know, we do all this great work. We do all these things. And then all it takes to kind of get numbers back to the other side, like to your point of, it's like it is a numbers game. Shout out K-pop Demon Hunters. K-pop Demon Hunters. Have you watched that?
I haven't started it yet. No,
that's really good. It's all
it's
about,
on my list.
Yeah, it's on your list, right? It's about getting people on. You know, whose side are these they on in like the fandom thing, and that's kind of like what this is. And
yeah,
to mention pop culture thing that's going on right now that we can attribute here. And a lot of like what they're doing is just like doing videos and marketing and superseding all of the really great work that I'll admit they do in places like Andor, because it's really easy to get them back on the other side. If you can just pop an AI video up that just, you know, undoes the art.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, when you can make a video of anyone saying anything, it's, you know, the manipulation becomes that much more accessible.
Well, I'm focusing on like the negative part. The other part should be, we just got to spread more media literacy, I think, to like one of your last points here. But like,
yeah,
media literacy, that's how you supersede that. Like,
oh yeah,
because I saw that, huge, and I was just flabbergasted. I was like, holy moly, people are actually believing this. But yeah, they were, but they just didn't know. They just didn't know. So like, gotta do more stuff.
The comparison that I saw with AI recently in an article was that the introduction of AI is basically an academic atomic bomb.
Yeah.
Where we, with like, I think it's with surgical steel, you have to use steel that was made before the atomic bomb dropped. Otherwise, it's like contaminated.
That makes sense.
And so they were like, we're going to, like, theoretically, we're going to reach this point where for academic sources, you're going to have to look at things pre-AI.
Yeah.
And if you can't vet it with something pre-AI, you need to vet your source that was post-AI to make sure that it was not like a hallucination that fed you this.
Yeah.
But anyway, all that to say, like, I do think this all makes sense. Like, I think pop culture and protest blending together is it makes sense. And honestly, in some ways, it's a good thing. I think it is more accessible to outsiders.
Yeah.
It's easier. Yeah. It's easier to get your point across shorter. And also, not everything needs to be an original statement. You can put together four different protest signs painted on to 100 signs, and now you've got a whole bunch of people, and your message is very clear and very unified, and we're there for the same thing. I do think variety is important. Like, I saw signs against Trump, against ICE, against Musk, all sorts of things, just general anti-fascism, anti-dictator. Mm-hmm. But I do want to go back. I know we touched on it a little bit. Andor is the thing that people are now like, oh, Star Wars is political now, or like, now I get it. Confession, have not watched any of Andor. What is it about that show?
You got it at seven, my dude. Like, you got it at seven.
Yeah.
What does it do? It just takes I don't know.
Like what does it do that people are that now it's clicking?
It's just done in like it picture, and I know comparison is like the thief of joy, blah blah blah, blah. I don't care. HBO level Star Wars, a political HBO political thing, make it Star Wars, and that's what it is. It's a lot of slow burns, a lot of like sci-fi or a lot of spy thriller stuff with the guys
stripping
of
out the fantasy elements, like
very little focus on the Force. Although for all you people saying that like this is how you do it without the Force, Cassian is like literally, you know, Force chosen essentially. Or the Force is literally with him throughout the series. I think it's
kind of like that Han Solo fan theory.
Yeah, exactly. So like I liked it. I gave an 8 out of 10 for But Why Though, but I don't think that it's amazing, because I think if you strip it down to what is it doing, showing you that the Empire is bad and sometimes the rebels have to do bad things to fight the Empire, that's like what are we doing? Like we've been on that story, and it shouldn't have taken you this, just because it's like a slow burn and it's more mature. I'm doing almost bunny quotes here, right? But I think it's just like it's a different sign, right? It's a different sign with a different painting, like to your point earlier, where for whatever reason this one makes sense to them, because it's more adult, quote unquote.
Yeah, well, it seems like it's more adult and it's a little bit more blunt
on the nose.
It's a little know, and so it's maybe it's because media literacy is where it is that a show this obvious is now where people
we're back around it? Right we're back around to like this is what George Lucas said, but without all of like the space wizards and stuff. And also, it's great. It's well acted. You'll probably like it. You'll probably like it. I just don't think it deserves as much praise, especially after the Acolyte was canceled last year. And I think the Acolyte does more of the
more interesting,
more questioning of the systems at play here better than I think that Andor does. Yeah, I think it kind of fails. It's like women characters a little bit, but that's yeah. Size one.
Well, and I'm thinking now on it, and I feel like part of why I actually do like this infusion of pop culture into protest is like people are basically taking the thing that brings them some amount of joy.
Yeah.
And they're using that to voice their protest.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a lot of like, you know, you can't just doom scroll all day and you need to go out and do these other things. And this is sort of people finding a way of like, I'm going to have fun. Like if I have to do this, I'm going to have fun while I do it.
Yeah.
Like as a mental stopgap. And not that protest is supposed to be fun. Like you are protesting, you're out marching, you are risking confrontation with law enforcement. Yeah. Like it's, you know, like I'm glad when protests go well and when they're not met with force. Like,
100%.
You know, obviously that's great. I don't want to see people brutalized, but you also need to be aware that that is a risk.
Yeah. And I think it's easier because to your point of like, when you're going to these protests, like, what are you supposed to wear? Or like, what are you supposed to like, who are you supposed to like, who's like the voice behind, I mean, religion, I saw lots of religious signs as well about like no kings.
I thought about doing that. I was just going to get like pictures of police brutality and then put like that, that whatever you do to the least of these, you do to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I should just get pictures of police brutality and then scripture.
Yeah, and then you can't like do, and then it's kind of hard to do like the American flag, right? Because no one wants to like wear the American flag. Or, I mean, it's hard to wear the American flag and like feel like you're on, you know, the getting the correct message across. So it's much easier to be like, yeah, Princess Leia. Hard to argue which side of the thing that she's on, you know. So it's easier to embrace that version of a rebel, especially if you don't have any other representations of that maybe in real life. And I mean, obviously that's slowly changing. There's some bad women. Jasmine Crockett out of Texas. I love her. She makes me want to move back. You know, like there's the Princess Leias are out there more. So as that happens, I'm hoping that it shifts to okay, Princess Leia exists. Who are the people who are in the Senate right now talking like Princess Leia, who are talking like Mon Mothma, who are where are like those people in Andor in real life? And I hope that they're like finding them and they're actually, you know, embracing the message, especially for you haven't watched any of Andor?
No.
Yeah, I think season one's a lot better because I think season one has like Nemec's manifesto, which I would just suggest just pop on. I'll send it over to you on a YouTube video of
please do.
Of what it is to resist and like what the Empire is and like how unnatural like their oppression is. And then I think season two is more of like, okay, that happens, so what kind of messed up stuff do we have to do to fight the beast, and all that stuff is like really good, and I hope that they take that and be like, yeah, that's right, how can I go do more in my local community to fight these things?
Because it's, you know, recognizing that we're not out of the woods, like one weekend protest is not going to solve
for sure
everything. There's always more work to be done. I will say for me, seeing the protest turn out both locally and nationally was, I'll say, a little bit of optimism. Like, obviously, I'm still tempering that with, you know, watching Supreme Court rulings and all this other stuff. But seeing that many people turn out, because I actually made the choice. I didn't go to the Portland protest. I went to a nearby small towns protest. And it was still a solid turnout. Obviously, it wasn't like the 50,000 people who turned out in Portland, but it was still like pretty good.
Yeah.
And I wasn't sure what to expect because this is a nearby small town that tends to skew more conservative.
Gotcha.
But like ultimately a bunch of people showed up. I got flipped off once. And I think another guy gave us a thumbs down while like speeding as fast as he could through the area to like just get out of there. And I was like, all right, if that's the extent of the counter argument here, I feel pretty good.
Yeah. I think for me, I mean, optimism for sure. And I think from coming from Texas, where I'm from, El Paso, which is, you know, 90% Hispanic, then moving to Austin, where it's just not that, and definitely more clearly race divided. And, you know, we were treated much differently by white people in Austin than we were anywhere else a lot of the times. So going to this protest when it is a lot of older, you know, white people who can take off a Friday or whatever day it was to like go protest. Right. I was worried. I was on edge, dude, because people were honking and like I didn't know if the honking was like to like,
oh, is it supportive?
Or is it supportive or but. Very like you said, like slowly but surely, I was like, okay, this is great. So I know now if there is another protest or another chance to go listen to someone speak or to go do something. I mean, I definitely feel more comfortable. Not that I wouldn't be feel comfortable anyway, but like I would go more now, and I feel more vindicated to go advocate for something, especially now after latest Supreme Court rulings that like literally put people like my wife in actual danger.
So. Totally. Yeah, and I think even that, you know, this is that tangentially related, but talking about, you know, well, how we were treated here versus how we're treated here, how we look being, you know, part of it.
Yeah.
I think that actually also ties back into like the why we're using pop culture is it's like, well, where do you see yourself?
Exactly.
Like, what do you have to point to and to identify with? And I think, you know, pop culture is a big part of like how it is literally how we tell stories. Yeah. Like it is. The stories that we tell, how we connect to each other, like it's a deeply ingrained part of society. I said a long time ago that I feel like Marvel and DC Comics historically are going to be seen as our Greek pantheon. Like,
and that's how I see it, dude. And that's how I see Star Wars. So when I see the signs, like I feel it. Because like that's, you know, that's not talking my religion,
you know,
but I have it
in 1,000 years.
I have it. If
an
archaeologist finds this tattooed on my body, they're going to be like, what the fuck was that? And then they're going to find out that it was Star Wars. And then, you know, it's ingrained. It's ingrained, and it's ingrained for like really good reasons because they're informed by really important things that happened in real life.
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, so I think all that to say is like, it is like, I'm glad people turned out. I'm glad that people continue to turn out. And I think that it's, you know, it's great that people have found a starting point, that they found media they identify with and that they see themselves in.
I would encourage them. I would encourage them to do more pop culture related things because it's going to touch more people than you'd be surprised.
And honestly, start learning more about that pop culture too. Like be able to talk about it in depth and with nuance.
Yeah.
Like,
where do the creators get the inspiration from? And that'll just naturally take you to really cool real life events and real.
Yeah.
Sometimes tragedies, like, sometimes successes. And I think that's the cool part of what we try to do.
Yeah, like it's this is a springboard, and like I hope that people were energized by attending and that they are now like learning current events more and like following how the system works. Learn your rights, especially as a protester. I'm gonna say that, like, know what you can and can't do, what you can and, you know, like in terms of keeping yourself safe. Obviously, like, the law is not always what is morally right.
Yeah.
You know, but like knowing basic things of like, yes, you can film. Yes, you can take pictures. Yes, you can ask for a badge number. Like, don't talk without your lawyer. Don't agree to anything. Don't sign it. Like learn those things. There's plenty of resources online for it.
And if Star Wars tells you anything, go together.
Yes. Yeah. Also learn best protest practices. Yeah. Like that's one is have someone with you.
Yeah, have someone with you.
Have an exit strategy, have, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, like learn where these things were inspired from, like learn the actual stories of resistance. Another thing that I don't really talk about is my great grandfather. One of them, my family's not Jewish. He landed himself in a concentration camp for being part of the resistance. He escaped. I don't know how, but he did.
Wow. I didn't know that.
But it's like, oh yeah. So like I can look at him and learn his story and be like, all right, like this is a family legacy.
For just to kind of harken back to like our pop culture point, I remember learning that George Takei was in
a Japanese internment camp.
Japanese internment camp. George Takei, Sulu, Star Trek, the guy that you saw for decades on TV was once in the country. Mm-hmm. And no, you would have never known that unless you were in a pop culture thing. And the amount of people who learn about American Japanese internment camps because of that is not insane, because I was a history teacher. I know that they don't teach they don't teach this stuff unless you tell it. Which, you know, and now even more way to fight of those kind of things going away because of DEI, blah 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 blah. But yeah, I mean, it's all there. It's all there if you just take a look.
It's, I mean, maybe one of the craziest things I know about those is the Washington State Fairgrounds, where there's a huge fair every year. That location was used as an internment camp in the 40s for Japanese American citizens. And now there's a tilt-a-whirl, like it's
not far away. You know,
yeah, you should learn about it. And I'm actually, I wonder if the fair does have anything up to kind of like reflect on that. And if they don't,
I wonder
they
if
really
they do.
Should.
I know that here in Santa Clara, it's really big. When I worked at Santa Clara University for a few years, and it is built on the Ohlone land from the Ohlone people. I know that because they do a land acknowledgement before like literally every event.
Okay.
So maybe.
Yeah, it would be nice if they did. I mean, again, it's like there's a Ferris wheel and a tilt-a-whirl and like scones and elephant, like every part of a fair is there. You would have no idea that that's what this area was used for.
Scary.
If you don't know the history.
Yeah. I mean that's probably everywhere here too in San Francisco, cuz that's where he was when
I say that so. Where that location is somewhere in that town, but whether or not they talk about it, who's to say. So yeah, like learn history. Learn pop culture, like get media literate, learn how these stories are told, how to identify when, because if you don't have the media literacy to know what something is trying to say, you're also not going to recognize when something is being twisted to say something that it's not, and when something's being exploited or misrepresented. But yeah, I just think it's like, it's great to recognize this as a common language. I totally get why people use it. I just think that, you know, there's always a step you can go further. If you can protest, if you can't, you can spread the word about protests. Like, there's just a lot that you can do, and now is a really important time to be doing it.
Heck yeah. Do or do not. There is no try.
Yeah. And also, on a last note, I just want to end this on abolish ICE. We can just say it. That's where But Why Though is.
Yeah. Fuck ICE. You can cut that out, Jason, if you want. But,
Did you guys have any protest signs about crushed ICE?
No crushed.
Because I definitely saw an old lady with a sign that just said, "I prefer my ice crushed."
That's a good one. No, I don't think so. It was more just like no ice, or like, yeah. I think just because of the community, it was very to the point for those signs. But crushed definitely. Ice is that crushed ice is a good one. I like that.
Yeah, I was like, oh, that's like a good like passive. Yeah. You know, cheeky whatever. But, yeah.
I think I saw one that was like, I only like my ice with Coke or something like that. Or something.
Oh, okay, that's
or
funny.
I only like my ice with like a drink or something like that.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, like ultimately, like you're there to like voice your dissent, voice your demands, like and rally as a people.
We were there to show up again.
Yeah, definitely. Any other closing thoughts, or should we wrap this up?
No, yeah, that's it for me. I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, Alex. It's always a great time.
Cool. Yeah. If you at home listening enjoy this conversation, if you want more, But Why Though is on Blue Sky at butwhytho.net. You can also subscribe to our newsletter. That's free. Or donate to the site. That's money. By going to butwhytho.net/support. Everything that you give does go towards keeping the site going. And honestly, subscribing to the newsletter is great for us. Like, that's a good way to give. So please consider doing that. Adrian, thank you so much for joining me. And thank you at home for listening. We'll see you next week. Thank you.